From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Thursday, July 2nd. I'm Jonathan Aull. The world was introduced to mRNA vaccines during the coronavirus pandemic. Now, scientists at WashU have found an mRNA flu vaccine may be next.
One of the interests in looking at an mRNA-based vaccine for the flu vaccine is that it would be a lot easier to update an mRNA-based vaccine to combat that viral mismatch. And so if the virus changes, you can then change the vaccine faster to cope.
Making a better, faster flu shot, that's coming up on The Gateway. After back-to-back days of hearings on a bill that creates zoning regulations for data centers in St. Louis, an aldermanic committee didn't take a vote yesterday. As St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports, the decision comes about a week before the board's two-month summer recess.
The bill would regulate where data centers could be built in the city and how to handle their energy needs. Members of the Housing, Urban Development, and Zoning Committee all seemed to want rules in place, but some argued that more time is needed to fine-tune the complicated bill. Alderwoman Ann Schweitzer, who sponsored the legislation, believed it could have been voted out of committee.
The public is crying out for these regulations to be in place. And, those are the people we represent and the people that we're supposed to be listening to.
If the data center regulations aren't passed by the board members' summer recess, President Megan Green's office says she could call a special meeting. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The city of St. Louis will limit when teens can be downtown for the entire summer. Mayor Kara Spencer announced the restrictions for those 17 and under yesterday. They will not be allowed in the downtown and downtown west neighborhoods without an adult from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. between July 3rd and September 8th. Police Chief Robert Tracy says the curfew builds on last year's focus on teens with fireworks and weapons.
Which I think is a great tool to help us really get ahead of young people and really set the tone that we want people to be safe, we want them to be safe, and we want juveniles to come down, but please come down with a guardian or a parent.
Kids caught violating the curfew during the July 4th weekend will be taken to a reunification center staffed by nonprofits. It's not clear what services will be available for those detained during the rest of the summer. The city of St. Louis saw the fewest homicides in the first half of the year since 2014. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman reports on the data released yesterday by the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department.
As of June 30th, 63 people had been killed in the city. That's 40% below the recent peak in 2020 and the lowest total at the halfway mark in 12 years. Similar drops are happening across the United States. Police Chief Robert Tracy says the department's focus on arresting people who are involved in non-fatal shootings has contributed to the decline.
You look at the individuals that we've identified that are out there committing these crimes with firearms, bring them into arrest, get them off the streets, hold them accountable, and then you start to see the shooting numbers to come down and then the homicide numbers start to follow.
Tracy and the St. Louis Police Officers Association say more cops are needed to continue the progress. Others want to see more investment in violence prevention programs. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Staff who work at St. Louis Public Schools' downtown office building have been working remotely since early June, and now they won't be able to return for another 2 weeks. The district closed the building when it suspected the bacteria that causes Legionnaires' disease was in the water and cooling systems. Legionnaires is a form of pneumonia. It can be treated with antibiotics, but can be deadly if it's not caught in time. The disease can't be passed from person to person. Most people get it from inhaling water droplets from water fountains, sinks, and showers. SLPS originally planned to reopen the building on Monday, but the district pushed that date back to July 20th to finish building upgrades and do one more round of precautionary testing for the bacteria. Missouri has officially turned over a new fiscal year. Governor Mike Kehoe signed the budget into law on Tuesday, as well as issuing 65 vetoes and 78 withholds. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports on the difference between the two.
Kehoe vetoed over $52 million worth of budget items. Those are allocations that will not be funded this fiscal year. Kehoe also restricted over $440 million in funding. Those projects were not vetoed, but for now the funds are being withheld. However, they could be released in the future. Habitat for Humanity St. Louis was slated to get $200,000. That money was restricted by Kehoe. Habitat for Humanity St. Louis CEO Kimberly McKinney said she would rather be on the restricted list than the veto list.
I am a big believer in Keep Hope Alive, so I would rather be on the withhold list than the veto list because it at least means there's still a chance.
According to McKinney, the $200,000 was the entirety of the state funding the organization was expected to get. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Bosnia and Herzegovina lost 2-0 to the U.S. in last night's World Cup match, ending their World Cup run. But Bosnians in St. Louis say they were happy to root for both teams. Hundreds gathered at Bivo Cafe Lounge in South St. Louis to watch the game. Most spectators were clad in Bosnia's blue and yellow colors. Almin Zuki's parents are from Bosnia. He came dressed in an American flag print cowboy hat and a Bosnia jersey.
And I also got American flags on my car and a Bosnian flag. I should have brought it. I'll root for whoever scores the goal. If it's Bosnia scores, I'll root. And if America scores, I root for America too.
St. Louis has one of the largest Bosnian populations outside of Europe. Many came to the region as refugees during the Bosnian War in the 90s. It's been 5 years since the first COVID-19 vaccines introduced messenger RNA to the market. Instead of using a weakened or inactive virus, mRNA vaccines teach the body to develop defenses against viruses. This summer, the Food and Drug Administration recommended approval of Moderna's mRNA-based flu vaccine for older adults, and a Washington University study found it may protect against a broader range of flu strains. Hanover Matz, one of the study's authors, spoke with St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum about the promise of the new technology.
What's really cool about mRNA-based vaccines is they actually provide the genetic information to produce the proteins that might be a part of a virus. They give that instruction to your cells, the cells learn how to make the protein, and then they use that protein to train your immune system to fight the virus.
And so why look into this kind of technology for a flu vaccine? Because we already have a flu vaccine. A lot of people take it every year.
The flu virus changes every year, and every year we have to update the vaccine to combat that virus. So one of the interests in looking at an mRNA-based vaccine for the flu vaccine is that it would be a lot easier to update an mRNA-based vaccine to combat that viral mismatch. And so if the virus changes, you can then change the vaccine faster to cope.
So tell me a little bit about how this worked and what you set out to find.
One of the things that we found in our research was an mRNA-based vaccine also seems to be very effective at stimulating a broad range of antibodies that can actually bind to different variants of the flu vaccine. So it's giving you better coverage if the virus mutates. When you get a vaccine and you get a shot in the arm, the components of the vaccine are going to drain to your lymph nodes. And the lymph nodes are the place where all the immune cells come together to learn how to fight the virus. And so no matter what type of vaccine you get, it's going to stimulate those cells to respond, and they're going to make something called a germinal center. And so what we found was that the mRNA-based vaccine was very, very good at producing those germinal centers in the lymph nodes.
I know that there are a few clinical trials going on at the time looking at mRNA for flu. How does this interact with all of the other studies that are going on in the other research?
Moderna conducted other clinical trials to evaluate the vaccine, and that is the data that they presented to the FDA to get approval for this vaccine. And so this was just sort of a small part of that larger data set that they were collecting to get the approval. Across all of the data that Moderna collected, they found that this vaccine was well tolerated in individuals who received it, so there weren't a lot of side effects. And then they found that for people over 50 years old, it seemed to be very good at preventing flu-like illness. And so people who are above 50, above 65, those are populations that we are particularly interested in developing better flu vaccines for, because they're populations that are more at risk for flu infection.
We're also at a political juncture where we're seeing some of the most powerful health officials in the country be skeptical of vaccines. What does that mean for further development of mRNA vaccines?
There has certainly been some uncertainty in the past few years about the future, like you've said, particularly for mRNA-based vaccines. I think it's important that we recognize that the science is out there and that these have been proven to be effective. And certainly while improvements in that uncertainty would be great for the science community, we're really excited still to go forward with this kind of research.
What would you tell people who are saying, this still feels like a new technology to me and I don't feel comfortable taking a vaccine that was made with this technology?
I think it's understandable that there's been some hesitation around this, and I think it's important that people always consult with their primary care physician when they're making decisions about their personal health care and vaccines. But I would say there has been a lot of testing of mRNA-based vaccines. There has been a lot of research. We had the vaccines that were approved for COVID, and now we have new vaccines that are in development, like this one for influenza virus. And the research is there that shows that these are safe, they're well tolerated, and they can stimulate very effective immune responses.
That was Washington University researcher Hanover Matz speaking with St. Louis Public Radio health reporter Sarah Fentum. Our Rob Edwards edited that story. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. The Gateway will be off tomorrow in observance of the Independence Day holiday. The podcast will be back on Monday. I'm Jonathan Aull, in for Abby Lurico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.